Next up, we will go to Mark Ulm and the preserve update.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners, and Secretary Roebling. Let me see if I can get my screen shared here. Is that showing up for you guys?
Yeah.
All right. Mark Ulm here, Wildlife Division Regional Supervisor out of Chamberlain. Today, I want to spend a little bit of time talking to you about our private shooting preserve program. I've got a short history put together. We're going to burn through that pretty quickly so we can get to the meat of the information that we've got today. In 1963, the original legislation that authorized shooting preserves was passed by the legislature. So we've got a 58-year history in South Dakota of private shooting preserves. Interestingly, in 1963, there was no minimum releases. There were some really, I'll say, different to my way of thinking rules in that legislation. I can share a full history with everybody if you want, but for now, just to save time, we're going to move on. Just hit the highlights here. It wasn't until 1967 that the first minimum releases for pheasants was passed. That minimum release was 500 birds. Up to 20% of those birds could be hens at that time. In 1976, the minimum release authorization was moved from the legislature to the commission. The commission reduced those releases from 500 to 200. In 1984, again, after a move from legislation to commission authority, kill tag fees were set at 5 cents per tag. Previously in legislation, they were set at 10 cents. 1986 was the first change in permit fee, application fees. At that time, it was set at $100 flat fee plus 50 cents per acre of permitted land. Previous to that, it was $100 for anything up to 640 acres, and then over between 640 acres to the maximum size of 1,280 acres, it was $100 plus 50 cents per acre over 640 acres. In 1986, the first daily bag limit was set on preserves at 8 roosters, or the change was made to 8 roosters. Other than in a few western counties where it was still 15 birds and hens could be taken outside of the regular season. In 1987, the permit fee was actually reduced to $100 plus 40 cents per acre, which is where we're at today. So that permit fee has not changed in quite some time. In 1996 was the next major change. That was when we went to a minimum release of 600 birds, or 300 birds if the preserve was in its first year of operation. At that time, there were still, hens allowed in that release, up to 20% again. Interestingly, up to this point as well, a preserve operator could only allow the harvest of up to 80% of the birds that they released. They could not go to 100% of what they had released. That change did not come until 2001, to where it was the commission allowed up to 100% of the number of roosters released. At that time, the change was also made that roosters were the only things that counted towards the minimum release. Hens could still be released, but it did not count towards the minimum. 2006 was the next major change, which is when we increased the daily bag limit to 15 roosters. 2009, along with some changes other changes in 2009, we increased the kill tag fee from 5 cents to 25 cents and also increased the daily bag limit to 20 roosters But that only went into effect or was effective from September 1st through the end of the regular season. From the end of the regular season through the end of the preserve season, it remained at 15 roosters. And then, as most of you are aware, in 2020, we received a petition and allowed the unrestricted opportunity, so no daily limit, as long as the hunter had the proper license. So that was 58 years of history in a very short amount of time. If you are interested, we do have a 15-page document that lines out all of the changes throughout the history of preserves. I would be happy to share with that with anybody that needs some good reading material to fall asleep at night. So, why are we here today? The big reason, in June of 2020, we received a question, a very simple question, should have been, how many individual hunters hunted on preserves in the 2019 season? The member of the public that asked this question rightfully thought that that should be something we should be able to get pretty easily. Unfortunately, with the current records that we require, that's not such a simple answer to get. So we started a process going through all of the records. About half of the approximately 175 to 200 preserve operators that we have on an annual basis, approximately half of those operators still submit handwritten records. So for all of those preserves that we have, we had 44,811 total records for the 2019 season. We had 15 people working on this, hand entering all of these records into a database so that we could sort, take out all the duplicates, and then compare that to our licensing database to get the total number of unique hunters. And at that point, we'd be able to identify what type of licenses were purchased, where these hunters came from, and so on. So of those 44,811 records, that accounted for 20,679 unique hunters in that that season. Just a real quick recap of those numbers, I guess. Of those 20,000 hunters, approximately 16,000, just under 17,000 were non-residents, leaving about 3,500 as resident hunters. Of the non-residents, as you can see on your screen, just over 9,000 had preserve licenses, and 7,700 had the regular non-resident small game licenses. Now, you'll notice the last line on there is not found. There's 331 hunters that were listed on preserve records that were not found in the licensing database. Now, there's some potential reasons for that, very legitimate reasons. It could be that some of these hunters were landowners hunting on their own land. They would still need to be entered as on the preserve records as hunting on the preserve. However, they would not be required to have a license. There's also the very real potential that some typographical errors were so severe between the preserve records and the licensing database that we were unable to find them at that point. So all of these numbers, very short list of answers that we were able to get. Total, it's about 2 pages of information. The 15 people that we had working on it spent over 1,700 hours trying to get this put together. We had recognized a need to move to some better record keeping previous to this, but this really emphasized what we want to do and some of the reasons that we need to move to something different. This is, in general, if somebody is submitting handwritten records, this is what we get. This is a blank sheet from that. You'll see dates hunted, hunter name, address, driver's license number, and then species taken. This is something that these records need to be submitted for every preserve that an operator has. Every preserve needs its own separate set of records. So some operators, some lodges are operating on multiple preserves. You might have, you know, one person hunting that may hunt on three or four separate preserves during one guided hunt. Every single one of those preserves needs to have its own records. So we're trying to make this a little bit easier for the preserves and for us. With that in mind, we are looking at going to an electronic records program. We have started developing that program already. Actually had started prior to this request. Staff within our GIS program helped us develop a program that we had six operators test this current year. We are really in the process now of refining that program and making some changes that are going to be beneficial not just to the department but to the preserves themselves. Some of the key benefits we're really looking for this program are just a consistent record format, making sure that everybody's recording the same information the same way so that when we need to sort and find some of these answers, we can do so by the couple of keystrokes rather than, you know, 1,700 man hours to get these numbers. So that's where we really want to be able to provide that data on hunter numbers, where they're coming from. We can use that in our marketing program. We could use that for a variety of uses. And a big portion of this is we also want this to be easier to use for the end user, for the operators themselves. So the timeline that we're looking at for implementation on this, like I said, we had six preserve operators testing this program during the 2020 season. They're still ongoing with that now. We are expanding that test pool during the 2021 season, looking at, I think we're going to be just under 30 lodges, 30 operators that are going to be testing this program for us. And then we're hoping by 2022 that we have a program that is good enough that we can make it available statewide and that it's usable by anybody, and we're going to use that, make that voluntary at that point. If we can get this, or when we get this to a point where it's truly beneficial to everybody, there may be a time that we want to come to you and potentially change the rules to require this program versus still allowing the handwritten records and everything that goes along with that. So that was everything I had in a very, very short amount of time. Is there any questions that I can answer for the commission at this time?
No, good presentation. I think that's great. You've got your template set up and you're marching down the path to get this automated and online. I think that'll be a benefit for everybody, as well as provide great information. So, good job on that dedication of time and getting this done. I can, Secretary Roman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kevin Roman here, Interim Department Secretary of the MC Park. Mark and all those who worked on this, thank you. I know this was a very timely exercise, a lot of effort. Good information came out of it, and looking forward to having electronic records in the future. So thanks to all the staff that worked on it.